Hi, I'm Tyra G., your host of Frankly Speaking with Tyra G. Welcome again to our virtual global gathering of phenomenal listeners, fearsome and generous, humble and honest, in pursuit of new possibilities and purpose. You know, here we dig deep and we come up strong. We bravely walk into places where tradition tells us there's some things you just don't talk about, but not at this table. And no matter how hard judgment tries to knock us down, it can't come in. Beloved, here we live beyond the wreckage. Every week, we experience, educate, encourage, and empower each other. We have a firm belief that everyone not only has a story, but everyone is a story. So, we share some aha moments and some stories that have been left in our pockets for way too long. Although many of your voices will speak light into darkness, there is no insignificant person around this table. Each week, we will start right where we are. The dress code is your authenticity, your inner awesome, and your belief that impossible is merely a word to describe the degree of difficulty. Frankly Speaking with Tyra G is one of my most ambitious dreams, and I thank God for every remembrance of you and your gifts of ideas, your presence, your encouragement. You've kept me going. I thank you so much. You're listening to Radio Fairfax, Fairfax, Virginia, cablecast on Cox and Verizon Fios, Channel 37 and Comcast, Channel 27 in Reston. And we are webcast worldwide at www.radiofairfax.org every Saturday evening. Should you miss us, don't worry about it. You can catch our archive, Frankly Speaking with Tyra G, wherever you listen to your podcasts. And on my website at tyragarlington.com. And if you'd like to connect with me offline, you know that's easy. Tyra at tyragarlington.com. Thank you, Courtney Nero, for composing and performing the Frankly Speaking with Tyra G theme and naming it I'm Listening. For 6 years, Frankly Speaking with Tyra G has been telling thematic stories to touch the mind, the heart, and the spirit. They've been multicultural, intergenerational, educational, and inspirational. And they've been told by you, my cohorts, my listeners. Thank you so much. However, here we are today in this moment, in a testing time. This is a time to accept and act like empathy is unlimited. This is a time to realize that you're doing better than you think you are. This is a time to elevate voices of hope. This is a time to reimagine what's essential. This is a time for believers to remember the same author that wrote Genesis wrote Revelation. He is still in the miracle business. It's a time for us to be encouraged. This month, Frankly Speaking, is intentionally focusing on phenomenal women, yes, us, and how we embrace and manage our universal experiences, our rainbows and our clouds, our courage and our resolve. We're on a journey, not a destination, a process, not an event. Even when we are still, yes, women, we are motion, loving and serving, nurturing and encouraging and empowering. We are love, and love does. But sometimes, even as phenomenal women, we get stuck in our no longer, the familiar, our habits. We got stuck between our no longer and our not yet, who we were created to be. And while stuck, we may ask the question, am I enough? By the way, the right answer is yes. So, phenomenal women, today we will share a common moment of mindfulness. We are going to look at how exterior mirrors often miss with our internal worthiness. In the words of life coach and award-winning author Ilana Van Sant in her book, Until Today, written in 2000, I wish to quote the following. Life will work for me when I accept the labels placed on me don't always fit. Society in its structures, expectations, and divisions has fostered certain ideas about women that are not always flattering. You hear me? There are many people who believe that strong women are not feminine and that assertive women cannot be trusted. And my all-time favorite is women who exhibit any degree of clarity about who they are and what they want are dangerous. Don't forget that bossy woman, domineering, and that she makes her get a description that begins with B. You know the B word. We won't bother to mention the myths that women are not smart as men, as they cannot handle money as well. The point is there's some people who believe these things about women, and guess what? Some of these people are women. Labels define. Often labels set up expectations. Labels prescribe how much, how little, sometimes how long a thing can be used. Labels are descriptive. Labels are protective. Labels can be removed. It just may be that time has come to take the labels off women. It is probable, and probably more accurate to say, it's time for women to take the labels off themselves. In order for a woman to realize that she's more than a mother, more than a wife, more than what she earns, or more than what she does for a living, she must know her own worth. It means she must test herself, her limits. A woman must learn to describe herself and establish her own expectations for herself. A woman must encourage herself. How many of us do that? Some must support and nurture themselves, and they must be willing, ready for this, to be disliked. She must be willing to violate the descriptions and the confines placed on her. Now, until today, you have made placing, defining, confining labels of unworthiness on women. But just for today, think of women as people. Think of women as human beings and human doings. They are all divine energy of God. For any of you who follow me, you know that in my manifest, I commit to encouraging, empowering women to walk in their worthiness. I'm amazed of the number of young, smart, beautiful women I meet who are not even comfortable in that space. My guest today is doing the work, paying the dues, and gracefully managing the rewards. The first inscription in her new book is a quote from Maya Angelou. And I love this. I love this. I kept reading it over and over again. You ready? We delight in the beauty of the butterfly, but rarely admit the changes it has come through to achieve that beauty. Can you take that away from metaphor? We refuse to delight in our own beauty right here, right now, because we refuse to see what we've come through to be who we are in this moment. My guest today personifies a butterfly and has come this week to share her journey. Her story will amaze and encourage and excite anyone who has ever felt left out, left over, or left behind. Now, she's bringing a message, and I said we are talking about phenomenal women, but guess what? This story is not gender specific. Men may not want to talk about it, but they got the same issues. So let me let her connect with you personally. Michelle Pettis, the mic is yours.
Oh, Tyra, thank you so much for having me today. I'm delighted to be in this studio. I'm delighted to be in your presence. And I'm delighted by that intro. I mean, I'm sitting here, I'm taking notes. I'm taking notes point after point after point. And I want to start off with this. about what you said and how it resonated with me, even as I introduced myself. It is about us all being in process. It is about this journey. And as I sit here before you today as someone who is a recovering workaholic.
Ah.
A food addict in recovery. My book, Leaving Large, The Stories of a Food Addict, chronicles 40 years of me battling this beast that so many, not just women, not just black women, but so many people are fighting. Over my lifetime, I have gained and lost 700 pounds.
Oh my gosh.
That's a 7 with 2 zeros, right? That's 700 pounds. I never weighed 700 pounds, but I would lose 30 and gain 40. I would lose 40 and gain 50. I would lose 50 and gain 60.
Yeah.
And I know I'm not alone in that.
Yes.
I know I'm not alone. I talk to too many people. I talk to too many people, too many women, really too many black women, too many sisters that are just like me that slay it in their jobs every day, right? They're breaking the glass ceiling, right? They're climbing the corporate ladder. They're doing the work. They're doing the work in their career. They're doing the work in their community. They're doing the work in their church. They're doing the work for their family, but they can't figure out how to do the work for themselves. They can't find out how to find peace for themselves.
Yes.
And once I cracked the code on this, that's why I'm here. That's my life's purpose. That's my life's work. I cracked the code on how to find that space between the what and the how to figure out what to do so you can get some peace.
Yes.
So you can get some peace around food. Because I want it. I didn't want to be a size 26. I don't want to be a size 24. No, I wanted to be a size 14, what I call a black woman's 10, right? That's what I wanted to be, right? And then when I got there, I found that there was something better for me other than that I couldn't even see when I was a size 26 or a size 24. So along the journey, as we move along the journey, we see some things. We see some vistas for ourselves that we can't see when we're stuck in another place. But as we move along the continuum, things open up for us.
That's right.
And so it is about my body. It is how my body looks. It is how my body feels. But more importantly, it's about what's going on in my brain, what's going on in my mind. Because what was on the outside with me and so many of us was a reflection of all the turmoil and the stress and the question and the confusion and the lack of clarity that you mentioned that was going on inside my head.
And I think I've seen that and experienced that. And I also think we don't have the language.
No.
We don't grow up with the language. And I think society, this current society, doesn't have us becoming our own mirrors at times.
No.
And using the language and asking the questions.
No. The current society, this current toxic food environment,
yes,
doesn't want us to have the language. It doesn't want us to have the language. And that we're being programmed. You know, we are programmed constantly in ways that we don't even know to respond to food. Food-like substances. I won't even call it food.
I gotcha.
Food-like substances in a way that suits commercial interest rather than the interest of our own bodies, our own health, and our own minds. That's the thing that is so, it's disempowering.
Yes,
It's disempowering. And the big, big issue around this, and the thing that I found in this journey for myself, is that, you know, sometimes we can be fooled. Sometimes we can be fooled because we think because I'm slaying it on the job, right? Because I got the money, I got the car, I got the house, I got all these external trappings, even though I'm still struggling with my weight, that it's okay. That we just accept that, you know, that I remember somebody telling me, you must come from big people, right?
Hey, you know, by the way, I'm going to interrupt her a lot because we discovered in our getting to know period on the phone, several phone calls, mm-hmm. that even this show is going to have to be turned into two. But what she said just then gets back to the labels I started out from.
Mm-hmm.
You must come from big people. Mm-hmm. And what I think right now, Michelle, telling people about your grandmother,
mm-hmm.
and Labels, negative labels can come from loved ones, not meant to be negative.
Yes.
But that's the language that they know to express
yes.
love. Talk a little bit
yes.
about what yes. your mother said to you.
Yes, 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 yes. All right, so.
Your grandmother,
My grandmother. I'm going to talk about that. Let me step back and set it up a little bit.
Okay.
I hear so often when I'm talking to people one-on-one and just out in general conversation, I hear this phrase, you know, food is my love language.
I hear you.
Mm-hmm. It's my love language.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I heard that so often that I had to look up the book. It was either the seven love languages or five love languages. And nowhere in that book did it say food was a love language. It did say certain acts were. It said, you act in a loving way. And I said, okay, this presentation. And I got to thinking about it. And I said, okay, it is okay for food to be a love language, but it needs to be real food. It doesn't need to be poison. It doesn't need to be that stuff that will kill us.
Mm-hmm.
And so we get confused by that. We get confused thinking just because it looks good, just because it smells good, just because it's pleasurable, right, that it's good for us. And it is not.
Mm-hmm.
And we're in this environment that teaches us to make decisions about food based on appearance, taste, smell, and pleasure.
Mm-hmm.
That's what we are taught. Ooh, that looks good. That smells good.
You know what you just said? I'm interrupting you again. You use the verb, that's what we are taught.
And
remember, I think we talked about a baby comes here, a baby's taste is taught to that baby.
Yes.
When
yes.
the baby's hungry, we assume it needs what Gerber said or some other
right.
people said they need to
right.
eat. Babies stop eating when they're no longer hungry.
Right.
And we think, oh, they didn't do the whole bottle or they didn't do the whole jar.
Mm-hmm.
And we force it on
mm-hmm.
them. And we don't understand at that time. We're setting up a lifelong pattern
yes.
of interpretation.
Yes, yes. We're setting up a lifelong pattern of one, teaching that my voice doesn't matter when I say no. That doesn't matter. Also, not to pay attention to what our body says.
Yes,
right.
Exactly.
Not paying attention to what our body says, and putting some sort of judgment around the food. So, I mean, you're a mother. You know, we're a parent, right?
Mm-hmm.
You're feeding your child, and you got your, like you say, your bottle of Gerber,
mm-hmm.
right? And the baby is like spitting it back up. I'm full. Mama, daddy, I'm done. I don't want the rest of that, so I'm spitting it out.
Uh-huh.
Oh, but it's just a little bit left. You can go ahead and finish that, right?
Yeah.
You can go ahead and if you got a baby that's a people pleasing baby like I was, right? And your mom or your daddy's like, oh, baby, come on, sweetie, you can finish
and
you want to finish the rest of it because you want to please them. You want to make your parents happy. You like that, and then they affirm you. That's a big boy. That's a big girl. You're such a good eater because the layer beyond that is that if my child is hungry. If I'm not feeding my child, if I don't give my child enough, then I'm not a good parent. Then I cannot provide for my child. So there's some complicated messages. There's a number of messages that are involved in how we manage food.
Yes, yes, yes,
how
yes.
How we manage food,
yes.
Not our relationship with food.
Yes, how we manage.
How we manage it.
Yeah.
And we have to be able to unpack those emotions around it to say, all right, if my baby doesn't want the rest of this mashed bananas, right? I don't have to force my baby to eat the rest of these mashed bananas. I can put that jar in the refrigerator and come back to it later,
yes.
right? Oh, you know, I don't want to waste the food. And I'm eating it because I don't want to waste the food. And we don't have this notion or this understanding is that when we eat more than what our body needs,
yeah.
we are still wasting food. It is still a waste. It's wasted energy.
It's turned to fat.
It turns to fat. We don't need it.
We're not using it.
It's still a waste. And, go ahead.
I'm just because the setup is so perfect. Well, first of all, you never even talked about the fact that you have a book yet. But the reason I'm pushing her is because the book is biographical. It is it's a journey into her soul, in the sitting room of her soul. But one of the things that impressed me was she was a premature baby.
Yes.
And her grandparents took over. And her grandparents were Southern thoughts, thinking. And they thought, oh, here's this little teeny weeny thing. We got to make it survive. And now tell the rest.
Yes, 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 yes. So for as long as I can remember, thank you for bringing me back.
That's my job.
For as long as I can remember, I remember my grandmother saying, "You know, you were a 7-month baby. You can't do that. You know, so you have some limitations." And I might have been a 7-month baby, but I had a 9-month baby mind. I was trying to do everything, but again, beyond part of that 7-month baby narrative was also this: is that my grandparents cared for me when my mother was unable to.
Yes,
and my grandparents took that job very seriously.
Yes, they did.
They knew that she entrusted my life and my health. That she entrusted my life and my health to them.
Yes.
And they weren't letting anything happen on their watch. They weren't letting anything. And so, again, being in the South, being in the desegregating South in the 60s, growing up with farmers. My grandparents were farmers, right?
Mm-hmm.
And with them having this love for their daughter, their youngest, my mother was their youngest child and their favorite child. Mm-hmm. I know you're not supposed to say that, but she was. Mm-hmm. And so I am the daughter of their favorite child who was premature. And they were like, we got this.
Yeah.
And food was the answer. But I do want to say that my grandparents, especially my grandmother. I think if my grandmother was alive right now, she would be a nutritionist because she was all around. She was all about the health stuff. And I would want Kool-Aid because other kids would have it. And she says, no, you can't have anything but sugar and some colored water. Mm-hmm. And she was like down with that. But very on, I became a sugar addict, right? So
yeah.
So that was a fight. That was a fight. And but we did have a healthy food and she paid attention to healthy food, but it's just that I was so hurt emotionally. I was just in so much pain and trauma as a kid, not by their doing, but the fact that I was separated from my mother.
Yes.
But I didn't have a name for that.
You didn't know what that was.
And nor did the community have a name for that. Because this idea of grandparents taking care of children, of their adult children's children while the children kind of make their way through mm-hmm. life mm-hmm. and then they give the children back to them, like that's not an uncommon thing. That's something that's part of our
tradition.
Culture.
That was tradition. And that comes from, people have to remember, slavery was that way.
Mm-hmm.
Family was a village
because
mm-hmm. you didn't know when it was going to get separated,
right.
et cetera. I remember, and my use-by date is coming up, but I remember going to grandmother so mommy could go visit daddy in the veterans hospital.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it was like everybody went to grandmother's.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, she loved it.
Right.
She doted on us. But it was a style of behavior.
Yes.
And I'm thinking about my goddaughters, their generation. Yes, that still exists in some sense, but they also have nannies.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But the tradition of love that your grandmother and grandfather brought
mm-hmm.
was the only thing we know how to do to make her prosper.
Mm-hmm.
It's to love and feed her.
Love and feed her. And it was a challenge, right?
Yeah.
It was a challenge because they wanted me to thrive, and the feeding was the only way for that to happen. And again, because I was like a people pleasing baby, right? And I saw, you know, how happy they were when I would eat. You know, I would eat because that would make them happy, and that continued. And then I started to get bigger, right? A, because I'm eating to make them happy, and I'm a sugar addict. And so now I get, you know, eat, but, you know, we need to go get you a girdle, right?
Yeah.
And I'm 9 years old wearing a girdle, right?
But also tell about the fact, 9 years old wearing a girdle, that's the personal thing. What was happening at school?
Yes. So, you know, school for me was, I'm kids weren't mean. I didn't get bullied. Mm-hmm, I didn't get bullied because of my weight when I was in school. But I bullied myself.
Yes, that's what I want you to get to. That's what happened.
I bullied myself because I wasn't like everybody else. Because I didn't fit in. You know, in the brain, children especially, even adults, that's why we have some of the challenges that we have. We want to be like everybody else. We want to conform. We want to fit in. We want to feel like we're part of a tribe. That's what they say now. And so part of my challenge was this, is that, again, like I said, I grew up in Marshall, Texas in the 60s in the desegregating South. And I was one of the first kids in my town of Marshall, Texas to integrate schools in Marshall, Texas.
Got it.
So the first year in the first grade, I went to Paul Lawrence Dunbar on the other side of town, which was a black school. It was a black elementary school. In my second grade year, I ended up going to Sam Houston, which was just two blocks from my house, which was a predominantly white school. Mm-hmm. So it was me and another black girl, right? We integrated that school. And I remember going, right, and just feeling out of place, right?
For a number of reasons.
Yeah, those first, and I write about how those first days at Sam Houston were lonely. I want to shout out that school. I want to shout out that teachers. I want to shout out the kids there. They weren't mean. I mean, I came to love that school. I came to love my teachers and the whole experience. But they didn't know me, and I didn't know them.
I understand.
And so I didn't know what to expect. And so those first weeks, those first months were difficult, right? Because, mm-hmm. you know, nobody was really, they weren't trying to come sit with us, new girl, new little color girl. Nobody was saying that.
We have to be fair, like you just said in that description, new can be any color and have those struggles.
Yes, new can be any color and have those struggles.
Yes.
Absolutely, absolutely. So, but what happens is the habit sets in.
I know.
So you, even after it became a place of acceptance and fun and all of that, the habit of eating had already been established.
I got it.
Mm-hmm. Right. So first we have, and this is for adults too.
Mm-hmm.
You know, first we have the thing, that whatever the thing is that drives us to eat, right? Mm-hmm. And then once the habit sets in, you don't even realize it's a habit because we're in this place of mindlessly eating. We don't even think about it,
mm-hmm.
and it's almost like this. And I hear it so much when I'm working with people, I'm coaching people. It's, oh, I had a hard day at work. I came home and I got something to eat and I went to bed.
I hear you.
I came home, I got something to eat and I went to bed.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the question becomes, when you got home, were you hungry or were you tired? And if you were tired, then the thing to do is to go to bed, not to eat.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But we're all ingrained with this notion of what it means to go to bed without eating,
mm-hmm.
especially if you come from a generation where there was lack, mm-hmm. right? If you come from a generation from a lack, going to bed hungry is a bad thing. It means that we can't provide, we can't be provided for, and when we wake up, there's not going to be any food.
And remember this, that was a punishment habit.
Yes, punishment.
You're going to bed without your dinner.
Yes, punishment. No.
Okay, so I know, to my audience, you got two personalities in the studio that are just feeding off of one another because this topic is so important and personal. And I haven't even, you don't even know the name of her book yet. So this is me as a hostess who didn't do a good job kicking her back into, excuse me, you're here because we met because you wrote what? Let's back up.
We're gonna slow the roll, and we are gonna back up. The name of my book is "Leaving Large: The Stories of a Food Addict," and it is my personal journey. It is my personal journey and struggle with 40 years of food addiction and obesity, just yo-yo dieting and toggling between being obese and morbidly obese.
Yes,
and finally figuring out how to make peace with food. Make peace with food so I can have a body that I love, right? And not only that, so that I can have joy. so that I can have peace, so that I can have pride, so that I can be free. Because the reality is that as long as we are slaves to food, we will never be free. As long as we're slaves to our appetite, we will not be free.
Yeah.
We won't be free to step into our full power. We won't be free to step into our full purpose. We can't. It is impossible. It is impossible as long as this is in the way. Because that statement, your health is your wealth, mm-hmm. that is real. And I want to stop and say, when I started on this road, Tyra, I think I told you this, it wasn't even about health. It wasn't about advocacy. It wasn't about, I just wanted to wear cuter clothes. I was tired.
But you know what? What you said, you just wanted to wear cuter. Do you know that's a motivator for a whole
Absolutely.
Bunch of people?
Absolutely. And yes, and it's okay. It's great. I mean, pick a reason and stick to it and do it. Because it is a journey. And as much as that's important to me, as much as that's a reason for me now, it is not my primary purpose. But that desire to wear cuter clothes brought me to this place, brought me to awareness and consciousness that I share and teach other people how to get to. I want other people to know that it's possible.
I just want my audience to know she got on some cute clothes today. And wait, she's coming to the studio. She calls. She says, "Tyra, I'm in front of Massage Envy." I said, "Well, did you decide to not do the show? What's going on?" You know, no, she was lost, but that's okay. I mean, the reason we're having, and I met Michelle through someone else, and Michelle had just done a TED Talk, and I said, "Okay, all right, well, let me see who she is," and I think you can probably feel the vibe, right? So I am being rude. I am. Interrupting her and redirecting her. But, you know, she and I talk for an hour and we only have 40 minutes for her to talk. So I'm going to redirect her over and over again. We know the name of the book. Where did you get that?
Yeah, Leaving Large.
Yeah.
That title speaks to something that you said in this intro. And that is about journey and about process. And I hear this. I'm gonna keep coming back to this. I hear so much in our language about I'm gonna do this, and then I'm gonna be set. There is no set. There is no set in life. Mm-hmm. There is no set when it comes to your health. It is no set in this process. So people say, I'm gonna go on a diet, right? I'm gonna go on a diet, I'm gonna lose this weight, and then I'm gonna be set. Right? And that set thinking is entrapment. That set thinking is a trap. And so leaving, that is about a continuous journey. That is about process. Mm-hmm. But what's hard for people and why people get into this, I'm going to go on this diet and I'm going to get there, is because they haven't figured out that changing your belief system, not just focusing on food, not just focusing on how much I can work out, not just focusing on what can I eat and how much of it I can eat. That's all behavior. We need to focus on belief system. We need to focus on that, because when you change your belief system, your body will follow. Your body will follow. And we live in this toxic food environment. We live in a world that has a weight loss industry that wants to keep us trapped in behavior. They are counting on the fact that you are going to get it wrong and that you are going to keep getting it wrong. Mm-hmm. Well, I am here to say that it is possible to get it right. And the way that you get it right is to start with your mind first.
Say it again.
Start with your mind, start with your belief system, start with your thoughts first, because everything flows from there. Everything flows from there. Mm-hmm. And I teach people. I don't help people. I'm not going to help you do anything. I'm going to teach you. I'm going to show you how to adopt a new belief system so you can reclaim your life, so you can get your life back, get your thoughts back, get away from all this programming that's going on in this environment so you can claim your life.
Mm-hmm.
Claim your life, claim your health. Because here's the thing. Once you make the shift, once you get control of this area of your life, once you get this skill, it can be applied to every other area of your life.
That's right.
I'm going to repeat that. Once you get this skill, it can be applied to every other area of your life. That's why my program, that's why I teach 52 weeks to total transformation. 52 weeks to total transformation. We're talking about mind, body, and spirit.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's all connected.
Mm-hmm.
It is not separate. When we eat, we are feeding our brains too.
Oh yeah.
We're not just feeding our bodies. Mm-hmm. So when our body is telling us that we're hungry and it's asking for broccoli and we give it chips.
Mm-hmm.
When we give it chips and a soda,
mm-hmm.
right? When we do that to our body, our bodies still want to love us. Our bodies still want to support us, right? And so what happens is that you go along and you don't eat. It doesn't look like your body's being mistreated because your body's still trying to work for you. But inside,
I know.
Inside the deprivation is happening.
Mm-hmm.
Inside the destruction is happening, but we can't see it until it shows up, and you're like, oh my gosh. What has happened?
Mm-hmm.
And it is all the processed snack, fast, and junk foods that our bodies cannot tolerate.
Mm-hmm.
That our bodies can't function with it. We are in a depressed state. Now, and I'm not necessarily talking about a mental depression, although there's mm-hmm. some of that too. But when I say we're in depressed state, I'm saying that we're not operating at
our
peak, mm-hmm. at our maximum, at our peak performance because of the food,
mm-hmm.
because of what we are doing to our bodies.
Yeah.
It is the food. And my book is Leaving Large, the Stories of a Food Addict. Tyra, if I knew two and a half years ago when I wrote my book what I wrote now, my title might be different. My title might be Stories of a Processed Food Addict.
Ah.
Of a processed food addict, because it is the processed foods that has the sugar, that has the salt,
mm-hmm.
that has the fat, that has the additives, that is all formulated to make us addictive.
Mm-hmm.
You can't use self-control and willpower and self-discipline to fight that, because that changes your brain. The manufacturers do it to make us want more, to eat more so they can sell more, right?
And then what I find so interesting, Michelle, is the product they're selling, the models they use look the exact opposite
yes.
of how right. you're going to look
right.
if you go on that
Absolutely.
Journey. Absolutely.
Because they're not eating it.
They're
just pretending that
and
they're eating it.
And not only that, they're working out.
Right. But the other piece about the other, if the title would have been The Stories of a Processed Food Addict, because here's the reality, is that food, good food, whole food, real food
mm-hmm.
will heal you. It will. We need that.
I believe it.
It will heal you. It will not hurt you.
I believe that.
And for the most part, we live in a culture, and this is what my TED Talk is about, is how we're confused about what food really is.
Mm-hmm.
We don't understand it. We don't understand it because we have a toxic food environment that wants us to think it's one thing and it's another. That's what they want, and that is what is robbing us of our good health. That is what is robbing us, and keeping us trapped.
Mm-hmm.
But when we figure out that I need to eat regularly, my diet needs to be primarily
mm-hmm.
vegetables,
mm-hmm.
fresh fruits and vegetables primarily, and good whole protein.
Mm-hmm.
Just do that, and things will start to shift.
I think a couple of things are triggered when you say that. I'm thinking about myself,
mm-hmm.
and I've had a lot of major health challenges, and I am so proud to say, well, my doctor says, you know, for an old broad, you are really healthy. But what happened at each challenge, I changed my habit. But it took the challenge. Habits, there's a book out called The Power of a Habit.
Mm-hmm.
That's what's driving us to all of these different places,
mm-hmm.
Socially,
mm-hmm.
culturally,
mm-hmm.
the clothes they make smaller, mm-hmm. so you have to do one set of things. The diet industry is just as driven, image-driven, as the food mm-hmm. industry. Mm-hmm. So I want you to talk about, I have several little yellow things. As you know, there's one chapter. I gave you an assignment. I gave you all the things I wanted you to read, and I bet you don't even have it with you. That's okay. I want you to talk about, and I want you to do this for a reason, because we're going to break our show up into mm-hmm. two parts. Talk about rock bottom, if yes. you don't mind.
No, no, sure. I'll talk about rock bottom. So, many times I am asked, well, how did you know you were a food addict? How did you know that you were an addict? And in that story, I talk about eating 60 fruitcake cookies. And, they were big. they weren't the little drops. And I'm like, to eat 60 of anything, right? There's some addiction mm-hmm. involved in that. Mm-hmm. So if I'm not an addict, I don't know what I am. What would you call that? Mm-hmm. And I start off the chapter, that essay, with that story. But as I move through that story, I talk about how eating 60 fruitcake cookies, as low as it was for me, it was not the only time that I hit low points. And every time I hit a low point, and I know I'm not alone. That's why I wrote this book, because I know I'm not alone. And I want any other people that are struggling with this to know that they are not alone mm-hmm. and to know that it's possible to climb up out of it. I talked about other times when I hit what I thought was rock bottom, and that, you know, when you're in it, you think I can't get any lower than this. It can't get any darker than this.
Describe a dark place. What's it like? What's happening career wise and all that?
So you know, there was one story, passage in that story, Rock Bottom, mm-hmm. where I talk about working for a classical music station.
Yes.
And we had a ball that we had to go to, and we had to learn these dances, and they paid for us to go get dresses made to get fitted for dresses at this costume shop.
Okay.
And I went to the costume shop to get fitted for a dress, and they didn't have any dresses that fit me. They didn't have any, and I had to make my own. Thank God I could sew. I had to make my own dress for this ball. That was a low point. But here's the thing.
But you it had wasn't, friends.
But it wasn't low enough for me to, it wasn't low enough for me to figure out how to change. It was low enough for me to want to change, but I didn't have the tools to change.
Okay.
And that was a cycle, because what happens when you hit rock bottom and you want to change and you try to change. And I did, and I didn't talk about this in that chapter, but I went to psychotherapy. I did hypnosis. I did clinical trials. I went to bariatric doctor after bariatric doctor. I was taking weight loss drugs before Ozempic. I was doing that in the 80s. I would go and take the drugs, go on a low-calorie diet, lose the weight, but think I was set. I didn't get the skill. I just did what they said. I didn't make the connection.
It was all externally driven.
It was just drive. It was just powering through. Mm-hmm. I didn't know how to make the mental connection to my belief system, to what I was actually doing, or even get the skill. Because if somebody just says, here, follow this diet, you aren't developing the skill to understand how to eat. Mm-hmm. You aren't. Mm-hmm. And so, if somebody works with me, they can come to me with a plan, with a program, whatever plan or program they want to. Because here's what I know, is that whatever plan or program they have, there's going to come a point when they can't do it. There's going to become a point when it's hard. There's going to be a point between the how and the what, and they're going to feel challenged. Mm-hmm. My work is to help people in that challenge. So, but if you come to work with me and you don't have a plan, that's fine. That, quite frankly, is even better. Because when you don't, then it allows me to help you, but teach you the skill around managing food. That's what most people don't have, is the skill to understand, to see the right thing when you see food that has sugar in it, to examine the labels, because the labels are tricky, right?
Oh, I know.
Yeah, they're
plus
they're,
you need a dictionary.
Plus you, and if you need a dictionary, that means you don't need to eat it.
That's right. Right.
if it means a dictionary, you don't need to eat it.
Correct.
So people have these notions of what they see when they see. When they see certain foods that drives them, mm-hmm. and even back to rock bottom, when I talk about that story, talking about that story, fruitcake cookies, man, fruitcake, I love fruitcake, but I'll never eat it again.
You should be telling. Oh, here I go interrupting her again. We forgot about your uncle's watermelon.
Oh, we'll get to my uncle's watermelon. I'll never eat it again.
I
mean, I grew up with my grandmother, and her making the fruitcake and going to the store to get the eggs and get the candied fruit and get the nuts and being in the kitchen and watching her stir it all up and having to walk softly so the cake won't fall,
right.
And that big heavy bowl,
yes.
And just being part of that whole experience, thinking about that experience right now, it just makes my heart all warm.
But see what you just said, we got to make sure we connect.
Yes.
The food is, she's talking about the experience. The food was tangential. She said being with grandmother, walking softly, big bowl, all the ingredients. It wasn't about, I'm going to eat these cookies. It was about being with grandma.
Right.
It exactly. was a process.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And that's how people get trapped.
Yeah.
That's how people get trapped, because they think, I thought I wanted food. I thought I wanted the fruitcake cookies. I thought I wanted that. What I wanted to do was to relive that experience.
Yes, yes, yes.
And once we learn how to separate the food from the experience, then we can find freedom.
Yes.
And that's what my book is about. That's what my story is all about, is that I recount all these stories where I made the connection thinking that I wanted the food, where I really wanted to relive the experience.
There you go.
And when you learn how to relive the experience without the food and know that it's possible, that really is where some joy lies. That's where some confidence lies. That's where getting your body and reclaiming your life lies. When you can separate the food from the memory, from the experience, from the event. Because it's not the food.
No.
It's not the food. It's what the food represents. It's what the food represents that you want.
I want you, because of all the things you said, I guess we do have time in this show
okay.
to talk about the watermelon.
Yes, yes.
I think this is because it ties right into the fruitcake.
Yes, 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 yes.
Would you mind sharing that?
I love that.
That
yes.
was so endearing to
yes.
me.
So the watermelon story, really, quite frankly, I'm glad you're asking about this, because this is really where the journey began for me. This is when the light bulb started to just flash and explode, and I got clarity.
Okay.
I got absolute clarity.
Okay.
And what I also got was I got this understanding of having a compelling reason for change.
Okay.
That's what we need. That's what we all need, a compelling reason for change. So the way, what happened was when the pandemic hit and I had already lost the weight, my doctor had been saying to me, you know, you should write a book.
Mm-hmm.
And she said you should write a cookbook. And she kept saying that to me over and over again, because I would come in having lost weight and I would share the things with her that I was eating. And she said, oh, my God, you should write a cookbook, but your cookbook needs to include the stories, because your stories are the things that have made the difference for you. Mm-hmm. You've got to do that. And I'm like, I'm not going to do that. And so when the pandemic hit and I got scared, because even though I had lost the weight and I felt like it was true, I hadn't been tested.
Ah.
And I knew, I felt like the pandemic was a test.
Okay.
So I decided, okay, I'm gonna write this cookbook. and I'm going to write these stories, and I'm going to write this journal, because everything I had read had said, write. It wasn't a journal, it was a diary. I'm going to write this diary, write about that which you know. And so I said, okay, I'll do a 90-day, I write about this 90-day diary of, living in COVID and surviving mm-hmm. and with all this. And so I started to write this, and I got stuck. I got stuck big time. Nothing was happening on the page. And so I went to Google, right, how to write a book. And the first thing Google said was, pick a lane, pick something. Okay, I was trying to do all three of them. No wonder I was stuck. So I thought about the cookbook, which is what my doctor had. She's a doctor, she must know cookbook, right? And I thought, well, but there are millions of cookbooks on Amazon. Why would somebody choose my cookbook? I'm not even a chef. I'm not even trained. What would make my book so special? No, not writing a cookbook. And then I thought, okay, that write what you know. I'm in this 90-day diary. I'll do that. And I started reading it. I'm like, oh, this is boring me. I know it's going to bore everybody else. So that diary is gone. And then I looked at the stories, and I thought about what my doctor said. She said, your stories have made all the difference for you. And when I started to look at the stories and to meditate on the stories and meditate on the stories, this story bubbled up. And it's the very first story. I had eaten something. I had eaten something. And the doctor said, eat this, right? No, follow this plan and take these shots. You will not be hungry. Follow this plan, take the shots. You will not be hungry. And then I found myself, even after she said that, being hungry. And I like, why am I hungry? Because she just said, you're not going to be hungry. And I remember praying in the doctor's office, tell me what I need to know. What am I missing? What am I missing? And this story bubbled up. I hope I have time to tell it. I am from the country, which I have said many times. And I was on my uncle's farm. This was many years ago, decades ago. And we were having a barbecue cookout, doing what black people do, in the summertime. And somebody brought out some watermelon. And I was like, hey, Billy, you want some of this watermelon? And my uncle said, no, I don't eat watermelon. And I'm like, what do you mean you don't? And he didn't say I don't want it. He didn't even say I don't like it. He said, I don't eat it. And I heard him. I'm like, Billy, what do you mean don't eat it? You got to tell me why you don't eat it. I just don't eat it. There must be a reason. Right. There's got to be a reason. So he finally broke down and told me that when he was a kid in 1930s Marshall, Texas, 6 or 7 years old, he and some buddies stole a watermelon from a neighbor's yard. And when my grandfather, who was a church trustee and a railroad worker, found out about it, he wasn't happy. And the one person, the kid that just stole a watermelon and doesn't want to meet, is that guy. Because when my grandfather found out that he had stolen this watermelon, he beat my uncle. He beat him. He beat him so severely that even after seven decades, my uncle still did not eat watermelon. He didn't eat it.
And I think what we need to emphasize is the brain. His memory changed his behavior.
Yes.
His memory of the punishment, of the separation, of the severity, he linked it.
Yes,
you know?
He linked it. And we all link it. Yep. We all link all foods to events, experiences,
yes.
and emotions, but we don't realize it.
Yes.
And as soon as we realize, as soon as we get awareness, as soon as we get consciousness, then we can start separating those linkages and start moving in a path that's based in nutrition, not based on those memories and addiction. Because I asked my uncle, I said, Billy, do you think maybe the lesson was supposed to be thou shalt not steal? Was that the lesson?
No, he said, thou shalt not eat.
And he just looked at me and said, I don't eat watermelon. And that was that.
I love it. I absolutely love it. Before I forget, first thing, Michelle will be back probably in March. We have a lot more to talk about. We did not even deal with the script. I guess you all figured that out with me constantly interrupting. But this is Frankly Speaking with Tyra G, and I was frankly speaking. And that's why I love doing this, and that's why I love you. I want you to do this, though. Will you tell our listening audience how to get in touch with you?
Yes, 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 yes. You can email me directly, Michelle, M-I-C-H-E-L-L-E, at michellepettis.com. That's Michelle at Michelle, and Pettis is P-E-T-T-I-E-S leavinglarge.com. My book is leavinglarge.com, and it's a website. You can get the book right off of the website. Just do leavinglarge.com. It'll come up. You can download a free chapter. You can download the watermelon story right from the website. If you order the book from the website, I will sign it and send it to you. How about that?
And I got to start doing that.
And if you email me, I will send you information on my workshops. I will send you information on my writing, healing through reading, writing, and storytelling workshops so you can unlock your own food stories. I also have a free Facebook group. I would love for you to be a part of that free Facebook group. If you have challenges with emotional eating, stress eating, I Am Brand New Now, you're so welcome. You'll be so supported.
All I can say, I've been sitting up here grinning for 55 minutes. Oops. But what I love to do, I really love to do this because I've had people tell me, oh, I like the doggy bag. So what I try to include every week is an excerpt that I call a spiritual doggy bag, because between now and the next time you hear from me, I'll bet you have a moment when you say, is this all there is? Or what if you have a moment that says, I'm tired of being tired? Or what if you have a moment that says, I'm eating too much? Here's what I want you to know. I want you to understand that this is one of my favorites, and it includes a note from love, also known as God, and as offered by author Glennon Doyle Melton. And I quote, stop. Stop holding your breath. Breathe. There's enough. I've created an abundance of acceptance, attention, recognition, joy, peace, money, energy, clothes, food. I will never leave you without enough. And there's nothing to be afraid of. No feeling, no circumstance, no person. These things come and they go, and you can live through them without running or hiding or numbing or hurting another one of my children. And did you know this, my angel? There is never anything wrong with you. Not one day in your life. You're exactly who you were meant to be right now as you are. You are not to be ashamed. You punish yourself, but you have no reason to be punished. You can stop now. You are free. I want you to know I'm here and I'm listening. This is Tyra G. Until next time.